Okay, so let's start. So, as usual, I start talking a little bit about meditation practice, just the ordinary stuff, just the same old stuff as always. But it's nice, right? All you need to do is you need to hear the same thing again and again and again, and gradually it kind of sinks in, and you know what you have to do. It's all about the conditioning of the mind, that's what they call it. So sometimes you just need to kind of think about it, reflect on it enough times, and eventually kind of it works out. So the general idea of Buddhist meditation is to, as always, just to enjoy yourself, have a good time, right? Sounds good. If you have a good time, you know you're on the right track. And of course, the whole purpose of this is that meditation is something that you do over the long term. You do it, you know, week after week. You come back to the Amara group, not just once, but many times. If you enjoy that, if you don't enjoy it, you don't come back. That's the problem. So because it is something you have to sustain over a long period of time, it's important that you enjoy the practice. This is like the first, kind of most basic thing of all about meditation. So to be able to do that, you always start the meditation off just by relaxing, finding the ease of the body, finding the ease of the mind. And that, in a sense, is just a way of being kind towards yourself. If you allow yourself to be at ease, if you allow yourself to be relaxed, it means you're having a sense of compassion and kindness towards yourself. And this is so important, right? Because that's one of the most kind of foundational things to make the meditation work, is your attitude that you have. And that attitude, a very important part of that is to have a sense of kindness, a sense of softness inside, instead of being hard, instead of being judgmental, fault-finding, all these kind of things. It's the softness inside that allows the mind to become peaceful. So that starts off with being kind towards yourself. And then as you do that, as you relax, as you, the body becomes relaxed, the mind becomes relaxed, what happens next? Many people, next thing happens that you fall asleep, right? That's the next thing. That's okay. So don't worry too much about that. Especially for the beginners, it's okay to fall asleep. So if we hear you snoring here, that's perfectly fine. It happens every meditation, somebody's snoring. That's perfectly okay. It means you're really relaxed. You have no self-consciousness, right? If you're snoring in the groups, that's really good. So just relaxing and snoring away. But the idea here is to move towards that sense of kindness, relaxedness inside. And then there's a number of things you can do once you get to that point. Because at that point, usually that's where mindfulness becomes the strongest. Mindfulness is this ability to be in the present moment, right? To be aware of what is happening around you and also inside of you. This is the word mindfulness, sati in the Pali language. And this arises when you feel at ease, when you feel relaxed, when the mind calms down, the mind becomes peaceful. And at that point, that is when you can start choosing what kind of meditation you want to do. Do I want to watch the breath? Watching the breath, of course, one of the very standard practices in Buddhism. And there's a practice the Buddha himself used to take him all the way to the end of the Buddhist path. It's a very powerful meditation technique. Sometimes it can be quite difficult, especially if you have a very busy life. You try to watch the breath. Oh, so boring, right? And before you know it, you fall asleep because the breath is so boring. Sometimes the breath doesn't work. So you have to know for yourself what works in your own practice. So if the breath doesn't work, another meditation which many people do, and some people here do it, is the metta meditation. Metta is a Pali word which means like love or kindness, right? So you're basically spreading out kindness, spreading out well-wishing to the people around you, to the people in the whole world, really. And this is one of those, again, foundational practices in Buddhism. And it's very useful for many reasons, because it purifies your heart, purifies you of any kind of bad emotions you may have and this kind of things. So it's very useful on so many different levels. It also makes you feel very happy, right? Not only do you wish other people well, you feel good as well. It's what they call a win-win situation. Everybody feels good consequences for everyone around. So the metta meditation, once you find that peace of the mind and peace of the body, the first thing to do is to bring to mind something which kind of lifts your mind up, which allows you to see the positive character, the positive characteristics and features of other people. So one of the ways of doing that, which I like to do sometimes, is just to remind myself, what do these beautiful spiritual qualities, what do they actually mean as a felt experience? What does it mean to be generous? Right? Sometimes we all have that feeling you want to be generous, right? What does it feel like to be really want to be generous? So you bring that feeling to mind. You remind yourself what that means. Or a time when you have been very compassionate, very kind to somebody. You've done the right thing in the world. So you remind yourself what these beautiful spiritual feelings are all about. And then you remind yourself that there are so many people in this world who have these kind of qualities, right? And when you feel that beauty of that quality inside of yourself and you project that out into the world, that's when it is possible to have a sense of love, a sense of kindness, of well-wishing, of this positive attitude towards the people everywhere around you. So this is what this is about. And then once you give rise to that kind of feeling, the sense of positivity in the people, wherever those people might be, then you can spread it out into the world, right? It doesn't have to be to specific individuals. The way the Buddha teaches it in the discourses is simply just focus on a certain direction, focus to the north. Remember all the people out there, not only people, animals as well, maybe even invisible beings, all the beings out there. And there are so many beings with so many wonderful qualities who really deserve well-wishing. So you wish them well, and you allow well-wishing to spread out of your heart without any barriers, without holding back, without being afraid of these kind of emotions. And then this very beautiful feeling, very powerful feeling, can arise inside of you as a consequence of that. But for this to work, you have to be very careful. You can't start off with a negative mood, right? So you have to be very careful here. If there's somebody, or maybe you had some trouble, everybody has some trouble during the day, right? This is the problem with life. There's always kind of frictions. Not necessarily anybody's fault, it's just the way life works out often. So if you have some kind of trouble, some kind of ill feeling or some kind of negativity or something towards somebody or whatever, it is very important to try to release that at the very beginning, because that is going to stop you and block you from enabling you to actually to spread this out in the, you know, wherever it is. So first of all, just ask yourself, if after the initial part of the meditation, when you feel fairly peaceful and nice, if there is any blockage there, the first thing often is then to forgive whatever person that might be, to forgive them and to let go of that. This is such an important part of the Buddhist path, is to be able to overcome any kind of ill will or anger or negativity we have. So check inside of you whether your mind is ready or whether it's not ready. If you're still kind of grumbling on about something, right, then it's time to kind of do some forgiveness, letting go, to see that person in a different way, remember their good qualities, or simply remember that if they have many bad qualities, understand that compassion is often necessary when somebody has many bad qualities, because they are deluded. They are the ones who are the first victim of their own bad qualities. So because of that, you can have a sense of compassion. So that comes first of all. You become peaceful. You check out your mind. Is your mind ready for this? You let go. You forgive of any problems that are there. Once you do that, then you can start to remember what those good spiritual qualities are all about. And once you establish those, once you remember what they are about, you get a bit of joy from that. Then you can start spreading that good well-wishing and out into the world, wherever it might be. Okay. That's the theory, right? Okay, so let's check it out and see what happens. Let's try that in practice and see if this works. You are allowed to do any kind of meditation you want to. Don't have to follow anything I say. If you don't want to, that's fine. But I will still do a guided meditation just in case. Okay. Okay, so the first thing in meditation is always to make sure you're nice and comfortable. So make sure that you sit nicely on the chair, fairly straight but leaning back nicely on the back, and your feet firmly on the ground, and you're sitting in a posture you know that you can hold for about half an hour or so. And then start off every meditation by just relaxing yourself, feeling the body, feeling if you have any tightness anywhere, any tensions, any problems whatsoever, and allow all that just to relax nicely. Take a few deep breaths if you have to, have a sense of kindness towards yourself, and allow yourself to relax beautifully. And just keep your attention on the body for now, like an overall view of the body. Wherever you feel any kind of discomfort or tension or whatever, just focus very peacefully and kindly on that area, and allow it to relax. Allow yourself to feel at ease. Have a sense of kindness and compassion for yourself. Never do anything in your meditation until you have relaxed 100%. The idea here is to relax more than you ever do ordinarily in life, really feel at ease completely. And the most important aspect of this is to have the right attitude towards yourself. Remember what a wonderful thing it is that you come here to the Armoury Group, that you actually live a wholesome and a good life. And what a wonderful thing that is. And everyone here deserves that happiness, deserves that ease, deserves to feel good about yourself. And once you realize that, it becomes so much easier to relax and enjoy just sitting peacefully here. And try to enjoy that feeling of being relaxed and being at ease. Try to enjoy that feeling of being more relaxed than you normally are. And the more you enjoy that, the more the mind is drawn into the present moment, and the more powerful the mindfulness becomes as a consequence. It is all about enjoying what you have. And the more you enjoy what you have, the easier it is to stay in the present. And just try to tune in to that sense of peace, the sense of peace that arises when a group of people sitting completely quietly together. There's something tangible about that, something beautiful about that. And if you allow that to penetrate inside of you, that peace also penetrates deeper inside of yourself, and your mind calms down as a consequence of that. So try to feel that peace. Feel how delightful it is. Feel how conducive it is to your own happiness. And now try to bring to mind the experience of spiritual qualities. What does it mean as a felt experience to you to be generous, to be kind, to be compassionate, to be peaceful, to have a sense of joy in your life? What are these experiences when they are felt? And try to bring to mind whatever comes naturally to you, and bring up that feeling, some memory from the past, something that you're able to tune into, so to speak. And then imagine the northern direction from here. Just choose any one of the four directions, wherever that is. And then imagine all the beings out there, all the people. And there are so many people, so many beings with so many wonderful qualities in the world, qualities of kindness, of generosity, of compassion, of peace, all of these things that are bring happiness to the world and are a service to the people around them, sometimes very developed, much more developed than perhaps our own qualities. And just remember that these are people truly worthy of our well-wishing, truly worthy of happiness. May all those people, all those beings in the north, may they be well, may they be happy. And then turn your attention around to the eastern direction. And again, remind yourself of all those beings out there, all the people, all the animals, whatever there is, and all the good qualities that exist in these beings. These are people truly worthy of well-wishing. Allow it to come from your heart, from deep inside of you. May every one of you out there, may you be well, may you be happy. turn your attention around to the southern direction and include all the monks down at Bodhinyana Monastery. And what a blessing it is to have a monastery like this, so close to the city of Perth. What a wonderful thing that is, that there are people who are developing their mind in deep and powerful meditation right here in Western Australia. And wish them well. Thank you for being there, every one of you. May you be well. May you be happy. And finally, bring your attention around to the western direction. And also remember all the animals in the world. How difficult it is to be an animal. How vulnerable you are to the seasons, to the weather, to everything around you, to people, whatever it is. You're so vulnerable and it's so difficult. And remember that people, in many ways, are just like animals. We too are very vulnerable to the problems and difficulties of the world, and that we too deserve that compassion, that understanding, that difficulties are inherent in existence. So may they all be free of suffering, may they find true happiness. then just at the very end, imagine the whole earth in your mind's eye. See this beautiful planet, blue and green and white in your mind's eye. And out of your heart comes a beautiful golden light that illuminates, that bathes the whole planet. It looks after all the beings, all the people, all the animals, whoever is there. Beautifully look after everyone. May everyone, the whole planet, may you be well. May you be happy. And then just come back to the peace of the present moment, and just enjoy the peace for a few moments. Ask yourself, how do you feel now? What has changed from when you started this meditation? What is different from what you began? How has the mind developed? What are the causes? What are the perceptions? What are the intentions you have developed? How does this process work? And as you understand the process, you start to be able to take charge of your meditation practice in a very real way. Now ring the gong 3 times, and on the 3rd ring, please come out of your meditation. Very good. Okay. So now is your chance to discuss the meditation. So if you want to complain about the teaching, this is the opportunity. Anybody have any questions? Anybody have any problems? Anybody fall asleep? Did anyone fall asleep?
No.
Didn't hear any snore? You fell asleep? Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
Very
yeah.
End.
Yeah, very end. Okay.
Yeah, I managed to catch myself. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. Okay. Well done. That's good.
Well
yeah.
Done.
Yeah. You're pretty
didn't
close as well.
Fall asleep.
Yeah.
A lot of nonsense going on as usual.
Yeah. 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 That's true. Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Can you tell me when you are meditating?
Yeah.
Is it good sense or bad or practice or whatever, if you can't even do 5 minutes with all the thoughts and stuff come through,
yeah,
is it worth just to go on to do longer or stay and try to at least get 5 minutes of
yeah five time? 5 minutes is great. If you can do five, it's wonderful. If you find that longer works for you, it's great. But remember, the important thing is whether it works or not. So if you're actually enjoying it, then it's great. But if you feel that, you know, it becomes kind of unpleasant or whatever, then don't do it. So build it up gradually. The thing about the Buddhist path is that it's a very integrated path. There's much more than just meditation practice, only one part of the path. And when all the other factors come together, that's when it really starts to work very well. So a very important part of the Buddhist path is the ethics or morality side of things. Although people come here, usually very, very good people, but usually can still up things a little bit more, right? And that will feed back into your meditation practice, and then things will kind of build up together. So do what you enjoy. Enjoying is the most important thing, because once you stop enjoying it, we will never see you again. It will be will be the end of it. Have you come for many long time, many times?
Long enough.
Okay, good.
I don't think she's started enjoying it
yet. I started enjoying it yet. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
I do, but sometimes I'm just sitting around at home, and I find that, you know, like you just said, I can't do it, so I get frustrated or whatever. So is it just best to think, okay, if I can't even do 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Leave it at 5.
Yeah,
don't
try
and do 10
or 15. Sure, it's fine, yeah. One of the things that is nice to do, sometimes it's quite hard when you're by yourself. This kind of group dynamics, which actually often kind of supports you to a certain extent. So what you can do is try to recreate some of the feeling you have here. And one way of doing that is to play a guided meditation for yourself. Right? So if you have a recording of a guided meditation that you like, play that to yourself, because it kind of gets you in the mood, it gets you in the thing here. Sometimes when you are in your house and everybody is all kind of family and all kind of things happening around you, it's very hard to get in the right mood, and this is what kind of stops you often. So this is what I mean by understanding your meditation, right? What are the things that supports you? So you reflect, what are the things that worked for me today? And then you bring those into next time you do the same thing. Yeah, good. Thanks for that. That's great to get some questions. Wonderful. Yes, Rachel.
I just want to say I thought it was lovely to be reminded that if we're leading a wholesome life, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because I think I can struggle, because it's not the same as friends, for instance. And so just to acknowledge that at the very beginning really helped me settle. So thank you for that.
Okay, good.
That's nice.
Great, yeah, that's good. Yeah.
And for us to contemplate our own generosity and our own kindness was lovely.
Yeah.
As a way of establishing the meditation.
Exactly. Well, this is how the Buddha teaches, right? He talks about chaga nusati. Chaga is a Pali word which means generosity. Sila nusati, sila means morality or conduct or habit or whatever. This is what it's supposed to do according to the Buddha. So if the Buddha said it, it must be really good, right? Really powerful, yeah. Okay. Anything else? Everybody okay? Yeah, everybody happy? Great. Okay.
So if you can't get some of those things, it delves up here. If you're enjoying a drink or 20, you shouldn't bother meditating, because you're never going to get there anyway. So can you have an each way bet on some of these things? Compromise your good, wholesome life.
Well, yeah, it depends, right? Drinking is not the worst kind of thing that you can do. I mean, there's things that are far worse than drinking, because drinking only really affects yourself, usually. If you do things that affect other people, it's often worse. So I would say if it matters if you enjoy it or not, right? As long as you're enjoying your meditation practice, it's going to have a good effect.
I was reading about what the rains thing, I was looking at that, and what they call the thing that happened Sunday, the word that
Katina ceremony.
Yeah,
what
they call it there.
Yeah.
And I looked that up, and they say that some people, some good Buddhists in Thailand, even give up drinking over rain. I thought that was quite enlightening.
Quite enlightening. Yeah, sometimes the Buddhist world is not a shining example as you might think it is. Yeah.
That's
so
all right, isn't it? That's good.
Yeah. There's a famous story actually about that. A famous story from Ajahn Chah's monastery. Ajahn Chah, you know, Ajahn Chah was Ajahn Brahm's teacher in Thailand, for those who don't know. Very, very famous monk in Thailand, regarded as one of the most highest meditation masters in the 20th century, essentially, at least in Thailand here. And his monastery was a very large monastery called Wat Pa Pong, which means Wat is monastery, Pa is forest, and Pong is like the name of the monastery. I'm not sure exactly what it probably means something as well. I'm not sure what it is. You know, the whole city of Ubon Ratchathani is one of the biggest cities in Thailand, and large parts of that city would come to his monastery, right, on the big days, the big celebrations, Katina being one of the big ones. And one of these celebrations, I think it was the Vesak ceremony or whatever, it's like a sea of people, right, you look at, oh, there's no end to the amount of people. And then he asked them all, says, oh, you know, how many of you keep the five precepts? Right, a sea of people. Two people raise their hand. Right, and this is
at least they're honest.
Yeah, at least they're honest, right? Exactly. So they got that precept. Got, yeah. Okay. So, but this is what it is. This is just like Christianity in the West, in a sense, right? People are kind of Christian in name, but not really in conduct very often. And this is why Buddhism in the West often is much more strong, because people take it very seriously here. The Buddhist Society of Western Australia has about 4,000, 5,000 members, and I think a couple of thousand of those keep the five precepts all the time. Right? It's incredibly powerful there. And I think we often underestimate actually how good our Buddhist practice is in the West. We think it is nothing much, but actually it turns out to be very powerful indeed. So we should be very happy about that, right? As you're saying, so that's really a really good thing.
Well,
so
just following on from that.
Please.
You know, last weekend, Padma and I was up at the monastery. All the monks are Western.
Not all of them, but
vast majority.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know as many Thai ones.
There's one Thai monk,
Oh, well, one.
Yeah.
Okay, but there's a vast lot of yourselves, European, mostly. And
sure.
There's a sort of very high level of education brought into that.
But that's the whole point, right? That's the whole point is that when you establish a monastery in a new country, you're supposed to have the local population, right? Okay, I'm kind of, I'm not quite local, but almost local, right? So I'm getting there. But being long enough, exactly. Yeah. So that's the whole point of it. If everyone there was Asian, you went there and they only spoke Thai and Chinese, I mean, you would feel slightly at odds, right? It's natural. So when it comes to the West, we should have a lot of Western monks. It's important. That's the kind of the whole thing. So then you can actually relate to the people, because you understand how people think in that country, how they, the culture and all these kind of things. It's also nice to have some monks that are more traditional Asian monks, because there's a large Asian population here as well. So a bit of mix is great, but certainly it's important to have Western monks. Yeah. Yes, Rachel.
You've been talking about the five precepts, and I'm aware that some people here may not have any idea what they are.
Maybe
you could
talk about five precepts. Okay.
That's okay.
Sure, yeah. Okay. Of course I can do that, yeah. So the five precepts are the basic morality on the Buddhist path, right? Is anybody here who does not know what the five precepts are? Do you know what they are? No, you don't know? Okay. You don't know what they are? Okay.
No,
okay, great. So there's a few, right, which is good. Okay. So this is the basic kind of morality on the Buddhist path. And the whole idea... Oops, we're getting interrupted now. Okay.
Thank you.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So the idea here is to integrate morality with the practice of meditation. And the reason for that is because if you live a good life, you tend to feel good about yourself. You tend to feel happy about your conduct, happy about the way you are. And as I said just a second ago, one of the great contemplations of the Buddha is actually to recollect your own kindness, your goodness. You think about something you have done in the past which made you feel joyful and happy. And when you do that, you bring that into the present moment. And it gives oomph to your meditation practice. When you feel happy, it clears the mind up, right? The tiredness goes away, the restlessness disappears, and you get that clarity which is required for the meditation practice. So without a sense of morality, without a sense of ethics, really meditation becomes, you can still do it, and you may still feel good about it, but it doesn't really have that power to take you very far on the Buddhist path. And the basic idea of Buddhist ethics is just to be kind, right? To be kind-hearted, not to do anything bad to other people. And that's really all you need to know. So if you have a good heart, you're fine, you're okay. You don't need to know much more than that. But the reality, of course, is sometimes we get a bit confused. Sometimes you have kind of powerful emotions drawing you in various directions. And when you have those powerful emotions, it's good to have some rules that kind of lays down the guidelines. It says, well, okay, here I shouldn't be going. Red light, stop, but don't go too far. Because then you actually have something that can kind of keep you in check when things kind of get out of hand. And these five rules, the first one is not to kill any living beings. That's quite hard for many people, right? Not killing, okay, not killing people is usually quite easy for most people. But killing animals can sometimes be very hard, especially if you take it all the way down the line, not to killing mosquitoes and that sort of thing. It can be quite difficult, right? If the mosquito is there sucking your blood, you think, you really just want to get it out of the way. It can be very difficult. So this is where you actually, part of the trick here is to learn to look at that mosquito, look at those irritating things in life in a different way. So you understand that the mosquito is just another being that wants to be happy, right? It's coming there to have a feed, right? Have some blood or whatever. Poor little being. So as you change your attitude and you understand that the mosquito isn't doing this out of ill will because I'm going to torture this particular person, it's doing it because of its own kind of habits, right? Just habits, just doing all kind of thing here. So when you look at the mosquito in a different way, it's actually much more difficult to kill that mosquito because you start to have compassion for these beings. And this is part and parcel of developing these precepts in the right way. It actually changes your attitude to things, changes your attitude to people, to yourself, to all of these things. So your mind actually changes at the same time. And this is why it can be very useful. So that is the first one. And remember, these are training rules, right? These are not commandments, thou shalt not. So in that sense, it's different from the Christian ideas. It's more like a training rule. So we try our best, and if we fail, there's no need to to blame yourself, anything like that. The second one is not to steal anything, right? Avoiding stealing. So which is actually quite nice. I think one of the things the Buddha says about stealing is that if you don't steal, you have a sense of purity, I think he says. So stealing kind of makes you feel impure if you steal anything. So you carry yourself with more purity if you don't steal anything. And of course, the opposite of stealing is, of course, the act of generosity, right? Giving. Stealing is being greedy for yourself. Generosity is giving up of your own things. So the antithesis, if you like, of being greedy. Stealing on one side, generosity on the other side. And generosity is one of these very powerful things on the Buddhist path. It's one of the other things the Buddha says we should contemplate, called the Chaganusati. Remember your generosity. Remember a time when you felt this urge to give, right? I'm sure most of you, many of you, all of you have had that sometimes. You feel this sense of just wanting to give, right? And it's a beautiful feeling when you get that inside. It's a very kind of uplifting and wonderful thing. And if you can bring that into your meditation because you have powerful memories of that, a time when you really did that, it will lift you up and enable you, again, the meditation to be empowered. These are very, very useful things. So not stealing, and then generosity on the other side. These are kind of two sides of the same coin. So take every opportunity you have to be generous, right? Every single opportunity. There's always opportunities in life to say a kind word, to give somebody a hand, to give somebody a little gift, to do an act of charity, act of generosity. There are so many opportunities when we start looking out for these things. To colleagues, to family members, to strangers, right? Normally, they might think you are crazy, do some kind of act of kindness towards a stranger, but still, sometimes you do that, and you see what happens when you do these things. Sometimes it has a marvelous effect when you do it. So in this way, you are building up this generosity inside of you. Sometimes you will feel very joyful, other times you won't feel anything at all, right? That's how life is, but you're learning how to build up the spiritual qualities inside of you. So that is the second. That's really not the second precept is not to steal, but I'm giving it a slanted as a positive side to the precepts, and there's a negative side. There's an avoiding, thou shalt not, if you like, and then there is thou shalt, which is the opposite side of the precept. Then there is the third one, and that is no sexual misconduct. And that basically means, from a Buddhist point of view, that you have a partner in life, you stay with that partner. That's essentially what it means. For a monastic, it means celibacy, no sexuality whatsoever. And the idea here, and the purpose of this, is basically to move the mind a little bit away from the sensual world. If you indulge too much in the sensual world, especially if you do it in a way that hurts other people, obviously it's not good, it's obviously bad. And that's what sexual misconduct really means, is using sexuality in a way that hurts other people. But the purpose here, ultimately, is to move slightly, gradually away from the sensual world. Because the sensual world is opposed to the happiness of the mind. And you will find that when you have when you do an act of generosity, for example, and you feel very joyful and very happy about that, there is no sensuality in the mind at that time. It is opposed to the ordinary sensual feelings. And because of that, these are kind of opposite things. To be able to really enjoy the meditation, you have to actually move out of the sensual world. And this is part and parcel of that training.